Elusive by Genevieve Cogman, read by Georgia Maguire. The French Revolution. Some more brief notes. Revolutions are not tidy things. This may seem obvious, but fiction, and indeed a lot of history books, tends to lead us to suppose that once the villains have been deposed and the good guys have seized power, everything will be all right. Minor details like heads dropping into baskets or inconvenient members of the royal family being disposed of in prisons or cellars can be glossed over. The later years of the French Revolution were absolutely not tidy. The introduction to the previous volume, Scarlet, mentioned such great events as the March on Versailles, the storming of the Bastille, the overthrow of the monarchy, the installation of the National Convention and the Committee of Public Safety, and the execution of the king. At this point, 1793 to 1794, France was at war with Austria, Prussia, England, Spain, the Dutch Republic, Naples, and various other powers. But more than that, France was dealing with continued internal strife. In 1793, there were armed uprisings against the new government in Vendée, Maine, and Brittany. In May, the leaders of Lyon rebelled against the National Convention. Soldiers were sent to put down these rebellions, and national conscription required all able-bodied single men aged between 18 and 25 to serve in the army. In the halls of power, the political parties were pursuing their own struggles over the future of France. The fall of one of the main parties, the Girondins, was followed closely by their most important members going to the guillotine, on accusations of treason and counter-revolutionary activities. Others were executed after being accused of sympathising with these now-defunct Girondins. Marat was stabbed in his bath by Charlotte Corday. Marie Antoinette was tried and sent to the guillotine. Prisoners were executed by mass drownings at Nantes. Their Hébertistes, another political party, followed the Girondins to imprisonment and execution. Robespierre declared, "The foundations of a popular government in a revolution are virtue and terror. Terror without virtue is disastrous, and virtue without terror is powerless. The government of the revolution is the despotism of liberty over tyranny." Yet France was growing and changing in other ways. The National Convention instituted the newly created Republican calendar, no longer in use, and the metric system, which is still in use, developed the optical telegraph, rededicated Notre Dame as a temple of reason, and voted to abolish slavery in French colonies. Some politicians urged indulgence towards opponents and national reconciliation. The National Museum of Natural History and the Louvre Museum were opened in Paris. Many people supported the revolution because it had made, and was making, changes for the better. The summary of events above is a gross oversimplification, an attempt to demonstrate just how much was happening. France was in a state of change, and so was the rest of the world. Talk of concepts such as enlightenment was spreading, bringing unease to the leaders of other European countries who'd seen what had happened in France and could feel the cold wind of the guillotine blade on the backs of their own necks. Repression frequently followed. After all, in 1792, the National Convention had claimed the right to intervene in any country where people desire to recover their freedom. Perhaps the best word for the situation would be unstable, both in France and outside it. And while people who benefit from the status quo may dislike instability, others may see profit in it. Dramatis personae. The Blakeney household. Sir Percy Blakeney and Lady Marguerite Blakeney, aristocrats. Mrs. Bann, housekeeper. Mr. Stern, butler. Alice and Rebecca, maids. The League of the Scarlet Pimpernel. Sir Andrew Fuchs, aristocrat. Lord Anthony Dewhurst, aristocrat. Lord Charles Bathurst, aristocrat and scholar. Other gentlemen of noble birth and leisure. Eleanor Dalton, maid. Anima, ancient ghost, member by association with Eleanor.